welcome to a brand new podcast here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I'm Kelly Nelson, and I'm joined today by somebody I've just spoke to for the first time literally about 10 minutes ago. This is Steve Willey from the Place to Be Nation family of podcasts. So this is a bit of a team up here between the two feeds. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm really excited to do this. And yeah, it's our first time that we've talked one-on-one. We've probably, yes, on one of those epic holiday shows, Cross Path or Trivia or something like
that. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, I forgot about the holiday and trivia shows. Yes, I'm sure we crossed paths. We're part of the same community, basically, and have been for probably a decade or so. And
yeah,
out of the blue, a few weeks ago, Steve messaged me on Facebook, and we struck up a conversation talking about some potential ideas for a podcast. And what we decided upon is a show looking at international wrestling, hence the name International House of Combat, which was a team effort in developing that name. I came up with the international part, and then you came up with the International House of, and then I finished it off with Combat. So we'll see. I'm usually good at naming shows. This one, for whatever reason, stumped me for several days. So as the name suggests, yes, we're going to be looking at international from this perspective of the United States. And yes, of course, I'm Canadian, but I wanted to have a cheat where we could watch Canadian footage, because there's lots of obscure Canadian footage. There's a lot of my hometown promotion, Stampede Wrestling, footage out there that a lot of people haven't seen. There's stuff from Quebec that I'm interested in looking at. I'm sure I can dig up some obscure stuff from other provinces in Canada. So for the purposes of this podcast, we'll consider Canada as international. And so the only rule is no American wrestling for this podcast. We'll have matches featuring American wrestlers, I'm sure, but they must take place outside of the borders of the United States. And this is also a watch-along podcast, so we're not gonna watch the matches beforehand and then discuss them. No, we're gonna watch them along with everybody listening who decides to want to do it that way, listening and watching on YouTube. So yeah, we're gonna have a playlist, an ongoing playlist on YouTube with the matches. Today we're gonna look at two matches. On future episodes, I'm sure we'll maybe look at more than two, maybe three, maybe four, depends. We don't want an epic long show, but about an hour in length, I think, is ideal. And yeah, we're both interested in international wrestling, in wrestling that is outside of the mainstream. And yeah, I've always been interested in that. Steve, you yourself, you've been into international wrestling for quite a while?
Yeah, I think when I was younger and when your big three kind of ended, your WWE, ECW, WCW, and that trio ended and you were just left with one, after a year or two of that, I kind of just got bored of it and started looking. You know, the internet was getting faster, the world was getting smaller. And there were already, you know, all of us who are of a certain age had our, you know, our Super J cups and whatnot, some of our Lucha stuff. We all had those. But, you know, that's when I started, you know, seeing Ring of Honor pop up in where I grew up, in the Chicago area, in the Milwaukee area. And then that brought me into the more local scenes. And then between friends and I picking up, you know, some of more of the Japan stuff, just like I said, like most of us do. And as the years go by, that seems to be what I'm more drawn to, the hidden gems that pop up on the network, or, you know, getting recommendations from like Chad Campbell will send me stuff from time to time. I just got I've been wanting this for years, but the Puerto Rican set from Will, who moved up to Wisconsin for a year or so. So we got to hang out a couple times. So like all these things, and I've been wanting to reach out to do other podcasts for a while. And part of it is now that we have more time in our lives with the world changing, and, you know, kind of getting out of my comfort zone and, you know, talking with you and, you know, taking a chance on that. A little bit different. I've had like the same, we run in the same communities pretty much we were talking about before. So to be able to reach out and do something new and something that speaks a little bit more to my interest level, where a lot of my friends, my closer friends, like doing Main Event with Scott and Nate, to get Scott to look at New Japan, just regular classic matches was a tough sell. So doing this more obscure stuff is an even harder sell. So reaching out to someone like you, I'd reached out to Will too, but Will's been pretty busy. So I thought this was just a natural match, just listening to you do some of your podcasts with like Worldcast and that.
Yeah. No, there's lots of people, of course, in the pro wrestling only community that are into international stuff, classic international stuff. Myself, like my bread and butter is 80s territorial wrestling and has been for quite a while. I love the 70s too. It's more difficult, of course, to find footage from the 70s, but I don't know, there's something about the 70s that really speaks to me. I love the grittiness of it. The 80s is very gritty too, especially something like Memphis. I love Memphis wrestling. Internationally, I've watched a lot of the big Japanese matches from the 90s. I went through a phase probably about 10 or 12 years ago. Went through a bunch of that stuff. But I never got super hardcore into it. One thing I really got into, and it was because of the Pro Wrestling Only message board, was Puerto Rican wrestling from the Carlos Colon era. There was a specific poster, Dylan Waco, Dylan Hales, as he's, well, that's his real name, and he's well known in certain circles. He posted a lot about internet or about Puerto Rican wrestling on PWO, and that really interested me. There's a poster on PWO known as El Boricua, who's done podcasts too for PWO, who's from Puerto Rico and knows a ton of the history. He's been super valuable. So that's something we'll definitely have to look at in the future. And around the same time I got into Puerto Rico, I got into World of Sport wrestling because it was very easily accessible on YouTube, still is. There's tons of matches there, full matches, and their TV matches were, you know, great, like these competitive long matches that, you know, pretty much blew away a lot of what you could compare it to at the time. Well, especially in the 70s, there's not a ton to compare it to, but to compare it to old WWWF, it of course blows it away, except for the Bruno matches. I love wrestling history, and I love checking out, you know, non-mainstream stuff. So this is great. I've always had it in the back of my mind to do something like an international wrestling podcast. So here we are. So today we're going to look at two matches. One from England in 1980, I believe, was the date. Or maybe 1981, actually, I think.
Yeah, I think it was 1981.
Yes. And the other one is from France, and it's from 1957. So we're going way back for that one. But first up is from World of Sport. It's from the Wembley Arena. This was one of the biggest shows, World of Sport technically wasn't a promotion. That was the TV show. Joint Promotions was the promotion. It was one of the biggest cards they ever promoted. The main event for this show was the infamous Big Daddy versus Giant Haystacks match. And that is something that is talked about to this day as being like a peak for British wrestling, for English wrestling, because Big Daddy was a huge draw. And crossed
huge
over.
Mainstream draw.
Yeah, crossed over to the mainstream in England. If you've never seen him before, he was huge. He resembled King Kong Bundy in body shape in a lot of ways. But he was already very old by the time he became huge as Big Daddy. I think he was well into his 40s, maybe into his 50s. And he was, just not a good worker. most of his matches were super short, you know. I think the match, even on this card, the main event against Giant Haystacks, I think only went a couple minutes, because Haystacks himself was pretty much...
He was not a small man.
No, not a small man, and also equally as immobile as Big Daddy. But we're not going to be looking at that match, no. We're going to be looking at an undercard match from that show. And it features a wrestler named Wayne Bridges, who I don't think I've ever seen a full match of before. But he passed away recently. Steve, have you watched many Wayne Bridges matches or any?
I have not seen any that I know of. But yeah, he has passed away this March, the 8th of March. So very recently.
Yes. And Dave Meltzer wrote a really good bio of him in the Wrestling Observer. And that's what piqued my interest, because I read the whole thing and it tells a very interesting story about how Bridges was a very popular wrestler in England, maybe one of the most popular. If Big Daddy was Hulk Hogan, I guess Bridges was more the Ric Flair in that comparison, as far as he was more the traditional wrestler who could wrestle long matches. But then again, he was a babyface. He was like a man of the people, as far as I can tell. The English really embraced him as one of their own, and he was a great wrestler. And at this time, and for a few years before this, he was pushed as the world champion. And the world champion in England was a title that was invented in 1979. They had Spiros Arion come in and was billed as the world champion. And Spiros Arion was a great international wrestler. He had a run in New York with Bruno in 1975. That was legendary. Sure. The title was just totally made up for him when he came in. It wasn't based on any title that had been defended before. And of course it wasn't the NWA world title. But in those days, pre-internet and limited TV options or whatever, you know, you could pass someone off as being the world champion because you couldn't prove that otherwise. So he was billed as the world champion. Eventually, Bridges got the belt from him. And now in 1981, he's defending the title. I said this to Steve before we started. I haven't been doing my regular research. my mindset has changed for podcasting for whatever reason in the last month, where I'm doing like all these watch-alongs and just going in cold. And it's something different for me because usually I do research and take notes. But so forgive me if I'm a little off on the particulars of the date and the situation and some other things, but whatever. So his opponent is interesting here, someone called the Mississippi Mauler. In the future, literally in a year from when this match took place, the Mississippi Mauler would become Kamala, the Ugandan giant in Memphis at first, and then, of course, in several other territories throughout the 80s. So this is interesting. I've never seen a pre-Kamala James Harris before, I don't think. Any familiarity?
I have not with the Mississippi Mauler. Growing up in Chicago area, we had a lot of access to territorial wrestling in the 80s. So like World Class was probably the first place that I saw him, because that first big expansion that World Class did, Chicago was part of it.
Right.
We didn't get any Memphis stuff back then. I can't recall that. And then, you know, hit a little bit of a run in the AWA, the NWA, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So more of the World Class is what first got me into him. That was 84?
83. I've been going through this on WorldCast with Pete and Johnny. Around the summer of 83, he came in.
Like May or June.
It would have been about June, because I think he was on that International Star Wars card that was in June in a 3-on-1 handicap match situation. So yeah, and he had I believe that was only his second territory as Kamala. He had been in Memphis, of course. Maybe he had been in Mid-South in between, but anyway, yeah, it was very new. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head when he started as a wrestler. I'm assuming, I guess, sometime in the 70s, but here he is being pushed in a pretty significant match on a major show. This show drew, I think Meltzer's reported it as about 7,000. So it wasn't a sellout, even though it's kind of been remembered as a sellout. And Wembley Arena could hold, I think, 10, 11,000. And for a show in England, they never drew super large crowds. They would do shows in a ton of towns, like an unbelievable amount of shows on any given day, kind of like how Mexico still runs things. At its peak in England, wrestling was just hopping everywhere. But they would hold them at halls that would hold like 1,000, 2,000 people. They wouldn't go for the giant crowds. So this was one of the rare times they branched out and tried a major arena. And for whatever reason, I think, I can't remember what how Meltzer explained it, but for whatever reason, the fans weren't really as interested in this one as a few of Big Daddy's previous main events in England. There's one against John Quinn that did sell out Wembley Arena. I think that was a couple of years before. Anyway, so here we are, big show for England, and it's Wayne Bridges versus the Mississippi Mauler, or Joined in Progress, it seems. And so we have this on YouTube. I'll provide a link everyone can access. And we'll do a countdown, 3, 2, 1, and on go, we'll press play, and we'll get going. 3, 2, 1, go. Okay.
Right in the middle of a nice nerve grip.
The only hole that Harris has had on Bridges is yeah. So far.
Probably, I don't know. I mean, we have a running time of 18 minutes on the video, so it's hard to say how far we're into this. English matches, of course, have the rounds system of rules, where there's usually it's 3-minute rounds, and I think it varies how many rounds they go to. I think 5 was kind of the standard. It's been a while since I've watched a lot of World of Sport, so I'm assuming this is probably like a 5-round match, but they occasionally did have matches that were just straight matches with no rounds.
Yeah.
So, since we missed the beginning of this, we don't know exactly what system is going on here.
Bridges is working the legs now after doing a little toe pick to take over. Now, this was... No one had the championship at this part.
Okay.
At this point. This was the finals of a tournament that was vacant.
Ah, yes. Yes, good. I remember
that
now.
This was the WWA World Heavyweight.
Okay, that's right. And I read about the situation about the vacancy too, but it's escaped me for now. Steve, feel free to research on the fly. So this is the finals of a tournament. That's cool. As you can see, it's a pretty big arena. And of course, you have the legendary Kent Walton on commentary. I can hear that. He was the voice of World of Sport for decades. One of the best announcers in wrestling history, as far as I'm concerned. Mississippi Mauler has a very interesting haircut.
It's almost Mr. T-like.
Yeah, before
Except
Mr. T.
before Mr. T, and there's a big chomp taken out of the side, or the top.
It's like he was in a hair versus hair match, and they started shaving his head, but he broke free and ran to the dressing room or something.
Yeah, forgot to do the rest backstage.
Yeah.
So one thing that I learned about Bridges, which I thought was an interesting note, is that he's a former Olympian from Britain. You would expect something like football. Well, football's not an Olympic sport, but usually you'd hear of like a track star or, you know, amateur wrestling or maybe martial arts. But he was a swimmer the 1960 Olympics, which you would not really, especially nowadays, they're generally taller and very lean, muscular. And he's a powerhouse. He's closer to like a Putski than he is a Michael Phelps.
Yeah, he's very tall. Because James Harris was a very large man.
6'7", I believe.
Yeah, he's in world class. He's built as 6'10", which is, of course, an exaggeration, but still, yeah, he had to be 6'5", 6'6", 6'7". And
Bridges,
I believe,
falls on top of him.
We got a fall. So that's the first fall, I assume, but we're not totally sure. And yeah, another aspect of the rules of English wrestling is you have to win two falls within five rounds.
That's out of three. Okay.
Yeah. So basically a 2 out of 3 falls match. Big pop for that. Very.
I do like the way. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, very much a real, like a boxing match with the corners coming in and toweling them off, and a very real sports presentation here.
Yeah, very much looks like a boxing ring. I was going to, even looks like judges at ringside, almost like in a boxing match, but the way they film it when they do the long shots, it comes out the corner, so it does make Wembley look completely filled the way they're shooting it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's darkened too, so you can't see the empty seats. I could be wrong, but I'm sure this is the show with Daddy and Haystacks as the main event, and that it drew about 7,000 or 8,000, not a full house. But as we've seen with current wrestling for AEW, they are able to, and well, WWE too, actually, probably more so WWE, they're able to film shows these days in the arenas that are nowhere near capacity and make them look pretty much full if you didn't know any better. So there's a definite art to filming wrestling.
Especially the empty arena shows.
That one. That takes a real skill to make that place look full.
And this crowd is really hot for Bridges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mahler's interesting. He's so much slimmer than he would be as Kamala. If I didn't know this was going to be Kamala, I wouldn't have guessed that. Maybe a little here with the selling. Yeah, you can see that's definitely very similar to how he would sell as Kamala, the wobbly selling. But still.
Yeah, not quite falling down.
Yeah, the teetering, the tree about to topple over sort of selling. But he's pretty much unrecognizable otherwise.
No, James Harris debuted in 78.
Okay.
And this was part of a foreign excursion he did early on in Germany and the UK.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess there was a few Americans that went over. Of course, the Hart brothers and guys from Stampede would go over, but that was like a total exchange program where that's how Dynamite came to Calgary in the first place. Dynamite Kid.
Sure.
Was because Bruce had been wrestling in England and he noticed how much Dynamite stood out and he brought him back to Calgary. There's footage of Bret Hart wrestling in England, I know. If you look on YouTube, it's there.
Took like a double chop and he wobbled and fell head first on the bottom. It didn't look pleasant.
Yeah. I don't know if the money was too.
Switch to striking.
It's just striking, yeah. I don't know if the money was too great to entice too many North Americans over to England. Because of course Lotz would go to Japan for paydays. Not sure what the pay was like in England. Oh, so we're into the 7th round according to Kent Walton. So
yeah.
So we missed, I guess, the first 5. Because pin will stop a round. And you start a new round after a pin or submission. Yeah, so this one's going much longer than your average World of Sport match.
I wonder that if because the belt was vacant, that they're just going to keep letting it go.
Yeah, and maybe heavyweights had longer, wrestled more rounds. I'm definitely not as familiar with heavyweight British wrestling as I am the lower weight classes. In England, they had several different weight classes. And the most revered matches are sort of like they are in, if you're a smart wrestling fan or whatever, you're more into the lighter weight guys, and just like in Japan and Mexico. And the names that a lot of fans in North America that are interested in world of sport go after are the ones that wrestled in the lighter weight classes. So I'm not too familiar with the heavyweights.
Mahler suckered him in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's totally wrestling like an American heel.
Yes, he is. Surprising stamina for the big man.
Yes.
If they're on the seventh round.
Mm.
Sunset flip.
Yeah, no. Mahler's looking pretty good.
Yeah, you figure that they've been going a good 18 minutes at mm-hmm. this part with the one round being cut off early.
Yeah.
Not very much time in between rounds either. Big headbutt.
And I've always been a big fan of Kamala. Definitely, yeah. The gimmick, he didn't have to be a super worker with the gimmick that he had. And he also would, because of the gimmick, wrestle a lot of very short matches. So, but overall, I thought Kamala was a great gimmick, great star. Nice, this could be a pin. The most subtle looking count by a referee you'll ever see. Barely raised his hand.
He didn't even count to three. He got to two and then passed.
And then tapped him on his shoulder.
Good psychology there, though. The previous pin,
yeah.
Ridge went for the crossbody and fell on top of him. And then this one jumped, Mahler caught him, and
yes.
dropped him into a backbreaker instead of going down.
Yeah, yeah. So he knew what was coming because of the previous fall and made the adjustment. And a backbreaker like that was definitely a finishing maneuver in the early 80s. That's why I was pretty certain it was going to lead to a pin. Also, pinfall attempts in matches back in the 80s, 70s were very rare. You would get some sprinkled out, but sometimes you'd see matches where the only time they went for a pinfall is when they actually pinned the guy. Very unlike today's wrestling.
I think we, besides the two that happened, we saw one essential zero count.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a totally different style of wrestling in so many ways than modern wrestling. Oh, Bridge is getting fired up, though. Oh. Oh, nice.
That's him off, though.
Oh, flying forearm there.
Got them both.
Mahler begging off. Oh. I think he's going into his trunks. It looked like he did.
Bridges is getting pretty aggressive here.
Yeah.
So fun little match.
Yeah. Yeah, I was hoping it would be. Wouldn't want the first match that we've reviewed together to be a total dud, 20-minute long, boring affair.
I look like Punky Brewster in
yes.
the crowd.
Her British counterpart. It's a very great forearm by Bridges just before that. Mahler keeps taking shortcuts and cheating.
Bridges just crumpled. Now, when did you, like, what age were you when you first saw Kamala?
9? Yeah, 1986. That's when I started watching wrestling. And literally, like, a month after I started watching WWF, he came back for that run with The Wizard and Kimchi. That went for about a year or so.
Yeah, because I'm thinking 84 for me, and I remember, and that would have been 8. So, I'm really only a year or two older than you. And I remember being a little frightened by him. There weren't many guys that were scary.
Yeah.
But he was, I mean, Kabuki was kind of scary.
Oh, I bet. I mean, I didn't see Kabuki until years later, other than I saw him in magazines and a few.
Sure.
There was a book that I had when I was quite young. You may have had it too or seen it, where it was Wrestling the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly was the title of the book. It was a George Napolitano photo book, and it was divided into sections, and of course Kabuki was in the ugly section. But anyway, yeah, Kamala, I had the infamous Sports Review Wrestling issue with the cover where it's photoshopped with Kamala with Hulk Hogan's head on a spear. I remember my dad, I'm sure I can remember this, when he looked at it, it was one of the few times he hesitated buying a wrestling magazine, because it was one of the most violent covers ever, really. Hogan's head was drenched in blood, completely covered in blood, and yeah, but it was such a great cover.
All Bridges out. Yeah, Abdullah was always terrifying to me, too, because of and Carlos Colon in the magazines, too.
Yes. Yep. That would have been that book I just mentioned, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, would have been where I saw Abdullah probably for the first time, because he was not part of any wrestling that I could see on TV in the 80s.
I'm 100% sure I got that in one of the Scholastic
supporters
school.
That's cool. I remember those, but I don't.
Which is insane if because they still have those.
Yeah.
And there's no way you're getting that these days.
No. Yeah, there was a couple of them. Oh, this must be the fun. Maybe not. It maybe was, but the referee's totally. Oh, the referee's just counting it. Just eyeballed that pin.
He didn't even bother to go on. Laziest referee I've ever seen.
Yeah. You think Bronco Lubitsch getting down on just one knee is lazy. This guy didn't even get down at all. But that was pretty common. Yeah, there's some interesting referees in World of Sport Wrestling with some pretty unique ways of counting pins. What you were saying about Bronco?
Oh, I was just going to say that he's like Tommy Young in comparison to that. I mean, he didn't even bother going down to count. I didn't even see his hand moving.
No, it was just...
It was more like an NBA rep.
Yeah.
I mean, the five count.
It was, exactly. It was, just in his head, 3 seconds. One Steamboat, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi. The Mississippi Mauler. Wayne Bridges is your new world heavyweight champion. Do we have a belt? Yes, he has it on already. Oh.
I didn't catch the name. It was Jimmy something who handed him the belt.
Okay.
Oh.
Harris.
Complaining that he pulled the tights. And I'm going to take that belt right off.
That's, of course, something you would never see when he's Kamala, him cutting a promo. That's crazy. And they called him Jim Harris. He's still the champion.
Saying that he's still the world champion, even though,
even
though the belt was vacant.
The belt looked very much like a boxing title, world title, like the WBA or WBC or whatever. Okay, well, that was interesting. Now we'll go on to our second match. Any comments, Steve, about the last match before we go on to the the next one?
I agreed with you on something. Like I am used to more of the catch-as-catch-can, more like the junior heavyweight style, like a Johnny Saint or something. So this was very different. Like you said, like Mahler was working as an American style heel, even working the rap a little bit. Mm-hmm. Bridge is, you know, similar more to like a Bruno than than someone else.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. Very much the top heavyweight star, like I said earlier, like a man of the people, just like Bruno was. And there was a bit of technical wrestling, but not a lot. But I think I'm no expert on Bridges. I'm assuming he could go on the mat when he needed to. We'll have to explore more Bridges on future episodes just to get a real feel for the guy. And we'll definitely check out some of the more well-known British workers as far as like the technical wizards go. Johnny Saint, yeah, he's great. Steve Gray is another one that's really good. Rollerball, Mark Rocco.
Rocco.
Yeah, very influential in his style as far as Dynamite and then Tiger Mask and the New Japan guys in the 80s. And my favorite, though, is Jim Breaks.
Jim Breaks, that's what I was just going to say.
Yeah, like not only one of the greatest heels ever, like legitimately, he's so awesome, just so hateable, but a great technical wrestler, great submission wrestler. That's someone we'll have to definitely keep an eye out for and look out and in some future matches. So we're going to go back now 24 years, 1957. This is French Catch, as it's known in France, and also, well, in Germany, it's also known as Catch. It's a very common term for wrestling. And this stuff is it's old, but it's kind of brand new, at least in my circle, in the pro wrestling only circle, as far as the story goes. There's a French TV archive site where if you have credentials as some sort of researcher, you can gain access to all kinds of footage. And there's a ton of French wrestling footage, TV footage, on that site. And somebody in the community was able to gain access, and basically they downloaded all the matches. There's about 200 hours of footage of stuff from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. Mostly from the 50s and 60s, it seems like, though. And these matches, some have trickled out over the years. I've seen bits and pieces here and there. But it's rare stuff. There's workers here that are known by their name as being legendary workers, but nobody has really seen them perform before, at least, you know, modern viewers. And there's guys from Spain that are apparently really good that wrestled in France a lot. There's a lot of English guys that wrestled in France a lot, and we're going to be looking at one of them. And you may recognize his name. Well, you definitely will. He's billed here as Al Hayes. And yes, it is a young Lord Alfred Hayes. Probably, Steve, you may have the details. I don't, about how old he was at this time. I'm guessing mid-20s, maybe even younger. So this is a treat.
He would have been 28.
Oh, okay.
So he was born in 1928.
Okay, yeah. This is getting close to 30.
Definitely early on in his career. His debut is listed in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think on Wrestling Data, his debut is listed as 1950. But there's no results for him on that site until like 1968, when he started wrestling in North America, or maybe in England at the end of the 60s. But and then when he did come to North America, he did really well in certain territories as a heel often, judo Al Hayes, but there's next to no footage of him wrestling. There's a match with Bobby Heenan from the AWA from 1980, I believe. That's actually a really great match. I don't know if you've seen it, Steve, but
no,
it's like the best. Like, Heenan was a great wrestler. He doesn't get credit for that usually, for sure. But he was a great wrestler. And Hayes was still pretty good at the time. They're both heels, actually, I think. but if you can find that one, it's definitely worth a watch. But other than that, I can't think of too many other Lord Al Hayes matches that are out there. But there's a few in this French footage that's been uncovered recently. And here's one of them. His opponent is Guy Robin. I know nothing about this individual at all. but, I mean, that's one of the points of this whole podcast, is to sort of just watch this stuff cold and, you know, take our opinions or develop opinions that way. Anything that you'd like to add before we start this one, Steve?
No, I mean, all of French wrestling, this is completely new to me. When I came to you, you know, when we talked about this, you sent this list of matches, and I'm like, yep, this is exactly why I wanted to do something like this. Uh-huh. So, I mean, as we go on, as you were talking, I did some quick clicking all over the place, and we can talk a little bit more about Al Hayes.
Okay.
Al Hayes' history in the 50s through the 70s.
Awesome. Okay, well, then let's get this one going. It's 27 minutes and 56 seconds, so we got almost a half hour here. All right, we'll do the countdown. 3, 2, 1, go. And the card says catch. And the
bonsoir, mesdames. Bonsoir, mesdemoiselles.
Another language that looked Arabic.
I'm 100%
sure. the only unfortunate thing about the French footage is the INA watermark that's on, I think, almost all of them, which is the French archive brand or symbol or whatever.
This ring looks.
Yeah.
This ring looks brutal.
Yes, I'm sure it was your, you know, cliched cement wrestling ring. Hard as cement.
The ropes are completely loose.
Yeah. Very much like the match we just saw from World of Sport. Yep. Cornerman with the wrestler. Boxing feel to it, but a lot of wrestling back then had this feel.
Much smaller building.
Yeah, much smaller building. I'd say the ring is also smaller. So that's Guy Robin right there.
Guy, thank you for being bald.
Yes, so it's easy to distinguish them, I guess. Al Hayes, the taller of the two. A lot of these French guys are not very tall, I know that. At least in the 50s, or at least from this footage that I've, little bits that I've seen there. A lot of light, shorter guys. But these guys can wrestle really amazingly.
He looks like he can be like an in-shape lawyer.
Yes.
Who's about like in his 40s. Exactly. Like, you would not expect him in a wrestling
game. No.
Yeah. Al Hayes looks great.
Yes, he does.
Al Hayes looks like an athlete.
Totally. Yeah, I wasn't expecting looking and then the way he's stretching on the ropes and stuff. Yeah. Again, like with the Mississippi Mahler and Kamala. I don't think I know. Well, this for sure, I would have never told you it was Al Hayes. And then I started this one a couple nights ago just to make sure this was actually Lord Alfred Hayes and not just some guy named Al Hayes with the same name. And there was at some point early where I could see his eyes, and then you can tell it's the same person, that it's Lord Al. But otherwise, it's, yeah, unrecognizable. So we're going to see a lot of mat work here.
I fully admit to not realizing until today that this was Lord Alfred Hayes. I'm just like, oh, Al Hayes versus, yeah, whatever. And then it hit me today. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
Hayes pops out.
Yeah.
So Hayes did debut in 1950.
Yeah.
Was his pro wrestling debut. And he was already a seventh Dan black belt judoka. So,
hopefully
we see
legit.
Some of that judo influence here.
Interesting.
Yeah, he was totally legit.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that was a gimmick or not. Because he used the judo gimmick in the States a lot.
Yeah, he. I found his obituary from The Guardian out in England. So this seems to be
cool.
Pretty legit. His most famous bout in Britain was in April 62 against Dr. Death.
Oh yeah.
He was the White Angel versus Dr. Death.
Interesting.
Et voilà.
Yeah, you can see in his facial expressions that's definitely Lord Al. Crazy.
Like some kind of crazy snapmare thing.
Yeah. You're going to see stuff here that has been lost to time as far as the way you work a wrestling match.
That's the beauty of this, though. Like, when you uncover stuff like this,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, people who are in the business can study it, you can bring that back.
Yeah.
Which is why, like, you know, all the grapple stuff that came back a few years ago
mm-hmm.
with your, you know, your Gulaks and your Thatchers and that.
Yeah.
Because there's even variations of holds here, like variations of arm drags. And
yeah, I think a lot of those indie guys like Thatcher and Gulak definitely got into the world of sport that was available on YouTube. Nice escape. So
Hayes stayed in England until 72, and then with it started wrestling started to fade there. So that's
yeah.
when he came to the United States.
That's crazy. So he'd have been 22 years in the business. Oh wow, 22 years in the business when he finally went to North America.
Oh. It's an interesting suplex. Whoa.
So Robin is definitely the heel.
Yeah, they shook hands at the beginning of the match, but he is backing off after he got suplexed.
Ah non, là, si Bréjon se met à prendre Robin par les cheveux qu'il n'a pas, ça devient très grave.
Now, did you see a match between him and Dory Funk from 72 for the NWA Championship?
Between Dory Funk.
I'm sorry, Hayes and Funk.
Hayes and Funk? No, I've never seen that.
Yeah, June 72. Again, this is from his obituary. He actually beat Dory Funk for the championship, but, you know, for whatever NWA rule, was not able to keep it.
Right. Look at Al. Incredible.
I thought it was you going, ah! But it seems like it's like the
yeah,
French,
the announcer too.
French color commentator.
Yeah, well, I wish there's so much from like Florida in that era, early 70s. That would be a gold mine if that footage was to exist, but there's not much of anything. There is a long match between Dory Funk Jr. and Jack Briscoe that's out there from 72, actually. That's a pretty damn good match.
He just wildly swings
mm-hmm.
when he's throwing the slaps.
There was maybe a
kind of stooging around on his selling.
Yeah. Lots of smoke billowing from the crowd, too. But that's how it would look like
so
today
gross.
If you filmed the show from France. I was just in Europe in February, just before everything went crazy, and yeah, smoking is still socially acceptable. pretty much in all the European countries, or at least on the continent. In England and in the UK, not so much for sure, but definitely in France, Italy, and Spain.
Voilà, voyez les kangourous, ça se met dans n'importe. Pour l'instant, ils jouent les autruches.
That was better in. We were in downtown Chicago, a little bit after Christmas, and having to explain to my kids, now that there is medical marijuana in Illinois, why every street corner when you're at the stoplight.
Yeah.
What's that smell? And my oldest knowing what marijuana is, but my, yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Because, I mean, I live on the west coast of Canada, and it smelled like that since the 1960s. It hasn't stopped. Very much a haven for marijuana enthusiasts out here.
C'est le coup de la toupie.
Nice. More roughhouse tactics from Robin. It's funny because Robin's the native, the Frenchman, and Hayes is the Englishman, but because he's such an asshole, the Englishman is the baby face.
And the commentator is laughing every time Robin does like a flop off of a move.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a good heel. Sure.
Ah, oui. À votre place, je serais inquiet.
Oh, like a cravat?
Yes.
But he's working.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a different way of seeing that used.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like if someone like Ono does it, they're, you know, staring at the camera.
Yeah.
He's almost working it more like a headlock. Oh, he's just slid right out of it.
Yeah, the commentator is really loving Hayes' escapes.
Mais Robin s'aperçoit bien qu'il y
touche. Robin just can't do anything. He's just total master of the ring here.
C'est gagné, mon petit.
Here Robin almost going for a rope-a-dope strategy. And it's not cheap. I wonder what kind of crowds they get at these shows in France, because you're looking at the first three rows, the men are all in suits and ties.
Yeah, a lot of ways similar to American crowds at the time. In the 50s, if you see a lot of the American footage, it's the crowds are, you know, dressed up for a night out on the town. And that's basically what it was. You know, go out for dinner and then go to the wrestling matches. I don't think you'd see too many children, if any, at all here. Wrestling was pretty, you know, looked at in a lot of ways as unsavory. And yeah, you just, not a place for, you know, children and upstanding individuals.
I'm going to pretend that it's French organized crime.
Could be some, for sure. Guy in the sunglasses, perhaps.
10 minutes de combat, d'un combat précis.
Yes.
He's got something to hide.
So does the lady in the front row.
Yeah, there's actually a few in sunglasses. Trying to disguise it, like, in case someone sees them all. Not supposed to be at the wrestling matches.
You went where?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you know, I know next to nothing about the history of French wrestling. Like, it was obviously very popular at one point, 50s, 60s, and actually, I know French. Like, the history of pro wrestling in France goes back into the 19th century. You know, basically around the same time it evolved in America. but yeah, I don't know much. There's just not, I mean, I can't read French, even though I'm Canadian and we're technically a bilingual country, but I live in Western Canada, you don't need to know French. So if the histories that are out there would be in French, of course, and yeah, I know by the 70s it started to really die, to the point where they were doing like some really outrageous gimmick matches with like trampolines and all kinds of stuff, and there was even topless women's wrestling became a thing in France. Of course it did. By the 80s,
when you said trampolines, I was in.
Yeah, I know for sure there's some footage in this archive that's just become available that features matches with trampolines and stuff. Like, I haven't watched them myself, but I've read about them. So we'll maybe have to find one of those for a future episode. But yeah, by the 80s,
As someone who's done live watches of those DDT, like those campsite matches.
Okay, yeah.
That's right up my alley.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've seen hardly any of DDT, but I'm very, I know the reputation they have for some pretty out there crazy stuff. Yeah. No, it sounds like France definitely went through a wacky phase in the 70s to, I guess, attract crowds when they stopped coming to the regular style wrestling. Yeah, that's definitely Al Hayes, you can see there now. Finally going for some pinfalls.
He's really torquing that knee.
Mm-hmm. Ben keeps going back to the cravat.
It's the first mat wrestling that we've seen. Mm-hmm. About 14 minutes in.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's because Robin was doing his best to avoid having to go to the mat.
He like swam and then popped out of it.
So nimble. Got some proto judo from Al Hayes there. A few chops. Crazy that he's 28 at the time. It seems like he should be 5 or so years younger. It all went to hell for Hayes once he went to the States and started eating hot dogs and hamburgers and pizza.
Yeah, bulked up to 230 pounds once he got to America.
3 points d'appui sur le sol, quand c'est pas 4, 5 des fois.
So how tall would you say Al Hayes is this match?
Hard to say. I'm trying to think how tall he appeared in the WWF in the 80s. You rarely saw him standing. He was always sitting on the couch next to Vince on TNT.
Right.
But Vince is a very tall man. I'd say he's about 6 feet tall.
Yeah,
maybe
5'11".
Okay, yeah.
Because against Guy, he looks like he's about 6'3".
Yeah. Well, like I said earlier, there's a lot of really short French wrestlers, some almost bordering on being a little person.
Yeah, he can't be over 5'6".
Yeah.
Si, mais si, mon vieux. Il y a des règles au catch, quoi que vous en pensiez. Oh, un crabe.
This commentator's just having the time of his life calling this match.
Il balaye. Nous, on a fait le ménage ce matin.
Balaye.
Allons, Hayes. C'est pas incroyable. Il a plus de cheveux, ça sert à rien.
What would you even call this?
I don't know.
He's got the legs.
Yeah, it looks like he...
Like the big...
Yeah, the beginning of a Texas Cloverleaf. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
You expect them to turn it over, but that's probably not something they did at all. Look at Al just take those forearms.
Oh, les têtes d'Australiens, c'est dur, mon Dieu. Tenez, voyez, et voilà.
This headbutt.
This has been just a match-long shine by Al Hayes. Well, Ben has not been on top at all. He has to get his heat. Come on. This is a different style, that's for sure.
All biting. He's getting his heat just by doing some comedy stuff.
Yeah.
Just the way he maneuvered.
Maybe now. Got his opening finally.
Yeah. There you go.
Gonna stay on top of him, Guy.
Le dieu de la pureté a levé ses deux mains. Et le public lui a manifesté son.
The announcers are apocalyptic at that. Just threw a knee.
Probably quite rare. Maybe. Oh. Yeah, now he's got control.
Ah.
So clearly this doesn't work in the round system.
No. I think, as far as I know, that was pretty much just unique to England.
Le rouge explique quelque chose au noir.
And I used to know the history of that off the top of my head, but I can't really think of it. Other than I think they adopted the rounds in England to appease, like, public pressure that wrestling was too violent at some point. I want to say right after World War II. And the rounds was just some sort of bullshit way to sort of appease the public. But I did a podcast many, many years ago with Parv and Stephen Graham about World of Sport. And I remember I had the history and all that. I had notes beforehand. So if you want to track that down somewhere in the archives, Titans Wrestling, that's where Titans Extra. That's where I explained the reason why they went to the round system. But I'm sure you could find that info online quite easily.
So it's an interesting sequence there with Hayes almost putting him in a like a package pile driver position and then just dropping him straight down.
Mm-hmm.
And then Robin getting backdropped over the top.
Ah, mais moi je veux bien, dit Hayes. C'est l'autre qui vient pas.
Well, the most famous French match that sort of emerged in the last decade, it's from 1957 as well. The names, I'll totally butcher them if I try and pronounce them. Billy Cantanzaro and Gilbert Cheska, I believe. Anyway, that match was raved at the time when it first was uncovered for having moves like Hurricane Ranas and stuff that we think that is only associated with like the 90s forward for wrestling. That's the style that you'll see these things that you think, oh wow, I didn't know that move was in existence in 1957, but and then you just see things that, oh, the referee's been pumped. Is this going to a DQ?
Possibly. He started doing some big stomps, not some knees.
Yeah, and the announcer on the outside made an announcement of some sort. I think maybe it's a warning. He's just been given a warning. But a little too rough.
L'enfant innocent, mes dieux! Robin, l'enfant innocent.
Also, I'd be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to my pal, Sean Whitaker, who's a big fan of this French discovery. And we'll probably be doing some shows together in the future, perhaps, around this.
Right.
He's quite enthusiastic about doing like a French project.
Robin de sa victime.
It's like a divorce court type move to his arm.
Nice.
Hayes is screaming.
Yes. He's in trouble now. It took 15 minutes or so. He's finally in charge. It was almost a Bob Backlund-esque shine by Al Hayes as far as the amount of time he spent in control. But you can see the rules are very strictly defined. As soon as the wrestler is on the mat, you have to break and give him a chance to get back up. Pretty much. Oh, look at this comeback. Rifling for him. Oh, big knee lift.
Oh, return of the favor. Yeah, those four uppercuts in a row were vicious.
Incredible. Al Hayes, forgotten super worker.
The speed that he was throwing.
Yeah. He's so speedy. Such good shape, dude.
Getting counted.
Yep. More forearms. Come on, Al, put him away. Another spinny boot to the eyes.
Third time a crowd's getting into those.
Yeah, that was a high spot in 1957.
Allez, abattez vos dernières cartes, monsieur l'Australien. Ah, il saigne nettement là.
He's got
Jerry Lawler's predecessor really was getting into him too. With the giggling.
Et l'autre est plié là-bas comme un marabout dans son coin. C'est plus des hommes. C'est même plus des mecs.
This match does not feel like it's 25 minutes long.
No.
Which is a sign of a great match.
Yeah. They've been going nonstop. But it's had good psychology. And, wrestled at a great little clip here with all kinds of crazy moves. I really like watching matches from the 50s. I don't do it near as often as I should, but they're great to see just little things that you never see in today's wrestling. Little tricks and different ways of telling stories.
They're putting the count on almost immediately after the guy drops.
God. Speaking of Dory Funk Jr. earlier, he's like Dory Funk Jr. with those European uppercuts.
I could see this being a knockout.
Yeah, it could be a TKO knockout.
Oh, his nose is busted.
Yeah, oh, he keeps going back to that arm, though. Yeah, now they're just battling for knockouts.
No, blocked it.
Here's the package powerbomb.
He got about 5 inches up the ground. Yeah.
Patented heel spins. Oh, are we going to see a pin? Yes, I don't think Guy can get out of that. No. Was that the only pinfall attempt of the whole match, Steve?
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. The exact opposite count than the English referee.
All right. Wow, that was pretty fun. Yeah, I think these French matches, we could do a whole podcast just watching these French matches.
Yeah, that was great. I can't believe that's Hayes.
Yeah, I know. Amazing. Putting his robe back on.
a young baby face.
Yes. Wow, that was a ton of fun. Guy Robin was pretty good in that too. Finny, yeah.
Yeah, that does look like Arabic.
Yeah, crazy. Well, that was awesome. Any final thoughts on that match, Steve?
I loved it. I was, you know, when someone gives a recommendation on the stuff that's brand new, you don't know exactly what their likes and dislikes are if you're going to match up with your opinion. Like, oh, it could be a completely different genre that does not interest me. And I enjoyed that a lot. There's a lot of great strikes, especially the last 8 minutes. There's a lot of fire shown by each one, and loved Robin stooging around.
Yeah.
Some of the selling.
Yeah, that was so fun. So unique, so different. Yeah, Hayes was really good as a babyface in that. Not like, you know, blow away great, but he was just, so young and nimble. And Robin, yeah, with the balding look that helps to make him more of a heel. And he was cheating and just being kind of a dick throughout the whole match. Yeah, that was a big time thumbs up from me. And yeah, well, this has been fun for a debut episode.
Yeah, I think so.
We have a few options for next time, but nothing has been decided. We'll definitely get into Japanese stuff. I know, Steve, you put in a match, a Joshi match, on our playlist that I definitely...
Early 80s.
Yeah, okay, because Joshi's another blind spot for me. I'd love to see some of the big matches with some of the great workers from there. So we'll be doing that, other Japanese stuff. Definitely get into some Lucha and more French, more World of Sport. Puerto Rico, there's a ton on YouTube, tons of cool possibilities there. And then we'll do some Canadian stuff here and there too, maybe, just because that's an option.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and YouTube has a lot of that, a lot of Canadian old territory stuff too, a lot of Stampede. So, yeah, awesome. Would you like to plug some shows and stuff, Steve, before we go?
Yeah, my big two. I'm on the main event every other week with that's on the pro wrestling side of Place to Be Nation with Scott and Nate Milton, who usually seen on or heard on Post Wrestling and the Kings of Sport. And we look a lot at newer wrestling. And then our second half, we've over the last few months switched over where we'll do some New Japan classic picks where we kind of bring Scott into the 2000s, introduce him to such a Hall of Famers that like Okada, you know, people he's never seen before.
That's crazy.
And then every month we'll do 2002 TNA, which is, it's hard. It's really hard because you have some of the beginning of independent wrestling as we know it today.
Yeah.
We have some of the worst, most misogynistic footage you'll ever see in professional wrestling. So we get a laugh. And then I just started with Nate again on his Kings of Sport. The first episode is free. The second, we're hoping to get some more Patreon subscribers for him. So it'll be behind the Patreon wall of $5 a month. And it is Nate and I, for those who don't know me, my regular job is a mental health counselor, therapist. And so Nate and I get some podcasters together, go through just how everyone's doing during this time of the coronavirus, what we're doing. We kind of call it half a 50% group therapy, 50% podcast all-star team. So our next episode will be with Damian Abraham of Post Wrestling, the Wrestlers documentary on Vice, lead singer of Fucked Up, which is bringing a lot of different friend groups together that don't interact with each other, the punk community and the wrestling community. So I'm really intrigued by that because Damien's got a lot of great stories.
Wow.
And he's not traveling the world right now, so he's stuck at home with his wife and children, and I'm sure that's a huge change for a
touring artist and documentarian.
Well, that's great. That's a lot more interesting than my usual slate of podcasts. That's cool. Everybody check that stuff out. For myself, WorldCast is finally coming back. Pete's been stuck on the front lines for several weeks now, and he's finally got some time to record. So we're going to record this coming weekend, and then we'll have it out in a few days after that. And we're back. We're just finishing up 1983 World Class, almost done with the year, and then into 1984. Finally, I've also been doing a Randy Savage watch along of his of the DVD that WWE put out a couple of years ago, the unreleased DVD. Just myself, every few days, watching a couple matches, and then yeah, a few ideas always floating around. But yeah, it'll be great to get WorldCast back and going again.
Yeah, that's a great show.
Well, thank you.
I'm behind on them, but I watch the show and then listen to the podcast, yeah. And then I went out and. You can't actually, I don't know if this is the same in Canada, but right now on Amazon, you can't buy DVDs. It takes a month to get them because they're considered non-essential. And I don't know what Amazon's thinking. Wrestling DVDs are clearly essential. So I bought the first disc on their Prime Video. It costs like $3 to do that. So same thing. I can watch along with that and –
Oh, great.
Check out your analysis of those great jobber matches, the first few.
Yeah.
Your man Mario Mancini making a couple appearances.
Yeah, exactly. Those are of all the matches I've watched, I think the most fun I had was the first few where it was all the jobber matches, and it was totally random, and it was just bang, bang, bang. Because now as we go forward, it looks like it's mostly going to be Savage against another star. Which is fine because most of the matches I haven't seen before, but still, those Saturday afternoon shows are so much fun. All right, well, thanks. And thanks for doing this, Steve. It's been great. I think
it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, the future I think will be awesome. We've got so many different possibilities to explore, and yeah, we'll be doing this every week or so, maybe a couple times a week here and there. I've got all the time in the world. So, yeah, may as well podcast. All right, well, hope everyone enjoyed this, and we'll see you next time. Good night.
Take care.